Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
It's not often you get to speak to a Nobel Prize winner. In fact, I've never had the honour until now. Let me introduce to you the American-born Aussie, who, as you may have heard, has taken out this year's Nobel Prize in Physics. It's a rarity in Australia. The last time this happened to an Aussie was back in 1915. The winner is Professor Brian Schmidt, an astrophysicist who's a laureate fellow at the Australian National University in Canberra, and he was awarded the prize for his groundbreaking work on the expansion of the universe. And Professor Schmidt joins us now on Open House. Professor, welcome.
Hello.
Can I start by asking you how and why you began this work?
Well, I moved to Australia in 1994, and as part of my program starting up at the Australian National University, I decided I wanted to ask one of the biggest questions we could ask as scientists, which is, what is the ultimate fate of the universe? And so I embarked on a program to go through and measure what the universe has done in the past and see how that has changed over time. And so this involved measuring how fast the universe is expanding now and comparing it to what the universe was doing about 5 billion years ago. So this was really a giant physics experiment that allowed me to work on what Edwin Hubble had done in 1929, which is discover the universe was expanding, but then use modern technology to look back in time by looking at extremely distant objects whose light takes billions of years to reach us, and really look back in time and see what the universe had done over those 5 billion years.
Can you explain to us in layman's terms what the significance of this work is?
So when we did this measurement, we expected the universe to be slowing down because the universe is full of gravity, and that gravity should pull on the universe just like the Earth pulls on a ball when you throw it up in the air.
Yes.
But what we found was that the universe was speeding up. In other words, it was like gravity was not working as we expected. Now, Albert Einstein had an idea back in 1917, which he later called his greatest blunder, which was that space might be full of energy, and under his equations, this energy that would fill space actually pushes on itself and would cause the universe to run away, to speed up just like we measure. And so by measuring the universe's acceleration, what we have in sense done is measured this energy, which we calculate to be about 75% of everything there is in the universe.
Wow. I think it's worth noting how astounding your discovery was. One professor called it one of the most jaw-dropping, unexpected, craziest results in the history of science. I think even you were surprised at your discovery at first.
Yes, when we first started seeing the data come in, I have to admit to thinking we must have been making a mistake because this is a crazy thing. It's like throwing a ball up in the air and have it taking off into orbit. It was that crazy. So we were in sort of wonderment, but you check your work, you keep working, and eventually it became pretty clear that it was not going to go away. And so I knew we were going to have to tell people that this is what we had discovered, but I wasn't really sure what they were going to think about it.
So tell me how it changes your realm of science and if there are implications for the rest of us in your discovery.
So, you know, when you go through and make a discovery like this, it's 75% of this universe is something, some energy that we really don't understand. You know, there's a huge fraction of the universe that we're not understanding. And so we have no idea how to make this energy, Einstein's energy. Until we really understand that, we're not really sure what's going on. So it opens up, I think, a lot of lines of scientific inquiry. Just like when there were some problems in the 1900s, we didn't quite understand why the speed of light was constant. Seemed like it should change depending on if you were moving or not. And that opened up all of the ideas of relativity and quantum mechanics, and that eventually led to the technology computer revolution that we're part of. So there's a big piece of information we're missing, and so by hopefully understanding this accelerating cosmos, maybe we'll get a new glimpse into physics that we don't understand.
Are there ways in which you can imagine in practical terms this changing life as we have had such a change in computers, for instance, with that earlier discovery?
So at this point, no. We have no idea. We're at the first stage.
Yes.
And there's no guarantee that we're ever going to get anything fundamental out of this. That's the way science works. You get big discoveries that end up being, you know, philosophically great, which we'll talk about next, but maybe not great at making a new toaster. You just don't know. But I think on the philosophical side, this is quite a profound discovery because it does actually tell us about the ultimate fate of the universe, which is that the universe is expanding more and more quickly over time. The galaxies and stars that we see, well, not so much the stars, but the galaxies we see beyond our own Milky Way, our own galaxy, are getting further away from us faster and faster. And if we go into the future far enough, that means that those galaxies will eventually be so far away that we will no longer be able to see them. We will look out on into an empty universe, a universe which will have the stars which are slowly dying in our own galaxy as they run out of nuclear fuel. They will have no more fuel to burn and no more fuel to make new stars. And so our universe will slowly fade away from view.
What a mind-expanding thing. Do you ever, as you contemplate these huge questions and exciting questions, do you ever contemplate at a level beyond science how it's all held together?
So in my case, I'm really a pragmatic person who looks at what I can know, and I accept there are things that I cannot know. And so in terms of the big structure of how it's put together, that is something I personally just accept that I don't know. Some of my colleagues are very much in working on the juncture of science and what I would call metaphysics, religion, and so that's a fairly gray area where I think the boundaries become quite confused, and I try to stay away from. So
yes.
I tend to say that's an area that is distinct from what I work on, but certainly interesting to many people nonetheless.
Yes, but there's great wisdom in being able to say, even a Nobel Prize winner, I don't know.
Yes, there's a lot we don't know, and as I said, there are some things at this point which are, I would say, unknowable. I cannot guarantee they'll always be unknowable, but at this point they're beyond any place where we can even sensibly, make any sort of judgment on what's going on.
Can I ask you about this great honor of the Nobel Prize? Did you know you're in contention?
Well, you never really know. There's always these ideas of, nominated or something, which was talked about last year. But we have no idea who's nominated or anything. So really, you don't know anything. And so I've met many people who thought they were going to win a Nobel Prize, but I haven't actually met very many people who won one. So it's sort of a pretty exciting thing when it happens, and it really did, pretty much from my perspective, come out of the blue.
I can imagine. How did you first find out?
So at 8:30 on Tuesday evening, we were having a late dinner, which I was helping produce, although my wife was more or less in charge. And we got a call from a woman with an impeccable Swedish accent who told me that this was a very important call from Sweden, and is this Brian Schmidt? And so at that point, I got a little suspicious of what was going on.
I heard that you imagined that it may have been some of your students playing a trick on you.
Yes, I have a bunch of students who are pretty good at doing elaborate pranks.
They're often like that, aren't they?
They're great. I was the same in my day,
yes.
I'm afraid. It's a great tradition we have in academia.
Yes.
And but after I listened to that Swedish accent, I said, unless they've managed to get someone from Sweden, because I was just in Sweden earlier this year, they've done a pretty good job.
I love it. It's great. I must ask you this before I let you go. Completely away from your work as an astrophysicist, you also escaped to your vineyard.
That's right. So when I moved to Canberra, one of the great things about living in the nation's capital here is it really is the bush capital, and so we have a small property just out of town. Yes, it had a perfect place to put a vineyard in, and so I grow grapes and make wine as sort of what I describe as my therapy for my astronomy taking over my life.
Yes, so, it's a world away from your weekday work.
Well, it's surprisingly there are many commonalities between making wine. There's creative aspects to it. There's a scientific aspect, making sure You know what's going on in the wines. And ultimately, you have to go out and sell the wine just like you have to tell people about the ideas that you have in astronomy. So it is different. It's good hard work with your hands and, you know, your body, but it does have some commonality.
Professor Brian Schmidt, it's been a treat talking with you. Congratulations again. Thanks very much for joining us on Open House.
My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.